Good morning. Welcome to The Gardening Show with Bob Harris. I'm Ann Holliday with Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ann.
And as you heard, you can send us an email at garden@wesb.com with a question for Bob. And you can also send pictures there, which is really cool. Or you can call us at 368-9372. Or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WESB1075. And you can ask a question there. You can also post pictures in the comments there, too, if you want. But
yeah,
Bob,
like that. Yeah.
We had a question last week after we went off the air, somebody from Facebook, and it was about a tomato plant, which you can actually see on our Facebook page right now.
Yeah.
And so you want to talk about that?
I sure do. So I'll describe it for those that aren't looking at it. Good looking tomato plant. But on the leaves, there are some real light-colored spots on the surface of the leaves. And that's due, that's no big deal, but that's usually due to what we call a flea beetle. They go underneath the leaf, and they have sucking mouth parts, so they suck the juice out of that leaf. And, of course, it leaves that spot on top, because all the chlorophyll is gone. Mm-hmm. And it's usually a thin, real thin, papery, thin spot, too. Now, it's normally not going to harm the plant at all. But if it does get to be too much, one thing you can do, and I suggested it to her, and she did it, and she's seeing better results now. You don't have to really spray an insecticide. It's hard to spray underneath a leaf with insecticide. You got to kind of spray up, and that's dangerous because it can be spraying towards you. So she sprayed it with hydrogen peroxide, a mix of hydrogen peroxide and some water, and the normal spray bottle, like your old Windex bottle or something that's been cleaned out. You put a couple tablespoons of hydrogen peroxide in there and the rest water, and you spray it right on the leaf. Now, that gives that plant a big blast of oxygen, and it's a little bit too much even for the insects, so it usually destroys them or makes them go away. But it does help the plant because it's another blast of oxygen, just like if you see those football players on the sideline with the oxygen mask on. It gives them a boost, and it can do that for your plant. A lot of people like rose growers love to do that on a weekly basis, even if there's no problem at all. They'll give all the leaves a little spray of hydrogen peroxide, and it keeps the plant real healthy, deters a lot of insects, stops a lot of funguses and diseases from occurring because they don't like that type of environment where there's a lot of oxygen. So it's getting to be a highly recommended thing, too, especially for the people that don't want to use any chemical. It's really a recommended thing. But so I guess that talks about that tomato plant.
But before she sent the picture, you thought it might have been powdery mildew and the hydrogen peroxide?
Would take care of that also, yeah, which is a fungal disease, the powdery mildew. So let me even talk about that, because you may see that on plants where it looks like it's real dusty all over. That's a powdery mildew, and that's due to poor air circulation. So sometimes on a tomato plant or any plant, you may have to clip off a few leaves so you can get better airflow through the plant. What really causes it is the leaves get wet, especially here every morning. They're going to get a dew. And if it doesn't dry up when the sun rises quickly, well, then it gives a chance for a fungus or bacteria to start to grow, and especially if the temperature is just right, which we have those good temperatures for fungus and mildews and so on to grow. So sometimes we have to thin out a plant to get better airflow. Maybe next year think about a spot for that plant that seems to get that problem in a different area, or that hydrogen peroxide, kind of get a schedule of maybe spraying it once a week with that little mist of hydrogen peroxide, and it'll help solve that problem. Another common one is a fungus, and it's you'll recognize it by It's usually a brown spot, kind of circular, with black dots in it.
Mm.
So, you know, the old saying in the gardening business is brown spots with black dots is fungus you got. yeah, us gardeners come up with that neat stuff like that. So that's a fungus. The brown spot is where it's destroyed the cells in the leaf. The black spots is the fungal spores. So it's continuing to grow. And again, that little blast of hydrogen peroxide will stop or slow down that fungus, and the plant can take care of itself again.
Okay.
So that's a couple of those things you want to look out for on the leaves of your plants to keep them healthy.
And so later today, I will post a picture of, that was the before picture of the plant. I'll post the after
okay.
picture later
yeah,
so you can
yeah.
see what a good job the hydrogen peroxide did.
It does, so, it does, yeah. But be careful, you know, don't go doing it full strength. Try to pick up the 3% hydrogen peroxide in the drugstore, or any store really carries it now, and mix it with water and spray it. And now this is going to be good too for a lot of those plants that all these rains that we did have, a lot of plants don't like to be wet, their roots wet constantly. That blocks off a lot of oxygen and gives a chance for a lot of those funguses to grow when it's wet constantly like that. So sometimes mixing a little bit of hydrogen peroxide in your watering can and watering it right into your plant, that puts oxygen back in the soil so those roots can come back to health and help, fight off that fungus that may be occurring there. And, you know, a good way to tell that if it's getting waterlogged is, you know, if it seems to be a low spot or a wet spot. Of course, you can test the soil, and even on a day like today when it should be getting dry, if it's still pretty wet, you may have a problem there. But another way is if the foliage is a little droopy, not real perky like it's supposed to be, a lot of people will think, well, it needs water. Sometimes it's because there's too much water. Mm-hmm. So it gets droopy because it has to have oxygen also to help draw the moisture up to the leaves. And if there's too much water, it blocks off that oxygen, even though oxygen is in water. but it does block that off because a lot of that water becomes stagnant. So all the oxygen has kind of left that water, or it's locked up so that the plant can't use it correctly. So watering in with a little bit of hydrogen peroxide, liquid oxygen, can help that. And to measure it, in the garden, you know, they'll give you a mathematical form to use, you know, so many tablespoons per gallon. But what I like to do in my watering can, let's say it's a gallon, you just tip that oxygen or yeah, that hydrogen peroxide bottle over. Give it a couple good glug, glug, glugs. Three glugs. And that ought to be enough hydrogen peroxide in that gallon of water. Not too much, but not too little. That'll help perk that plant back up.
Okay. So if you have a question for Bob, well, let's, before I give all that stuff, somebody already knew the phone thing. So let's just go to the phone. Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Yeah. I have a question about a house plant.
Yeah.
If you could help me with that or not.
I can give it a try.
Okay. Someone gave my wife a plant, and I think it's a peace lily.
Okay.
And I watered it, and a couple of days later, it all started drooping. And I read on the internet that fluoride in the water is poison to them.
Yeah, but it usually doesn't react that quickly. The fluoride in the water takes a long, long time to start to bother the plant. For that first watering, it's not going to do it. Now, does this have drainage in this plant container?
Yeah, I believe so. It's in like two baskets, and then there's a a plastic bag in between them.
Oh, okay. So whatever water you put in there doesn't drain out, does it?
I haven't picked it up to see if it's sitting in there, but...
Yeah, probably not. So that can cause a problem. When you have a container like that, your watering practice has to be very careful. So you water a container like that that doesn't drain all the way out of that container. Uh-huh. That just stays there, and of course that becomes stagnant, and then of course that starts making methane gas, robs all the plant of its oxygen, so it'll droop right away. So one thing you can do is poke a few holes in the soil. That'll let the air down in there and help evaporate some of that water that may be getting stagnant in there. Or even better yet, give it a little dose of the hydrogen peroxide mixed with water. And even if it's wet, you're going to water in that hydrogen peroxide, then let it dry out totally. And it if it isn't too late, it should perk right up. The peace lilies are normally really tough, and they can withstand a couple of those things. So I wouldn't give up on it yet.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling.
A lot of people that get houseplants, usually in a container that doesn't drain, because no one wants to set one on their table and have a puddle of water. So when you have a container like that that doesn't drain, doesn't let the water come right out of the container, you know, into a saucer, then be extremely careful with your water. If you think it needs a glass of water, give it half a glass of water. So a lot less water than you would normally any other type of plant, because watering is real critical in those types of containers.
Okay.
I shouldn't cut anything back on it, should I?
Not yet. Now, when it starts to turn brown, has it got any parts of it that are going brown?
No, they're just all real droopy.
Okay, yeah, you're okay yet. Once any plant parts begin to turn brown, yeah, trim them off as low as you possibly can so that a fungus or any disease can't build up and then go throughout the whole plant.
Oh, okay. All righty. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Bye.
Okay, thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Okay, we are going to take a break and hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith, but we will be right back. Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372-368-WESB. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WESB1075. You'll see a picture of a tomato plant there. Just if you have a question, you can leave a comment there. And he will be glad to answer that. Or you can send us an email, preferably with a picture, but it doesn't have to be with a picture, at garden@wesb.com. So, Bob, one of the other things you want to talk about today was rhododendrons.
Yeah, this has been an excellent year for rhododendrons because we had the right kind of winter for them, all those buds to survive. The rhododendron makes its flower buds this year for next year. And so that bud's got to survive all kind of weather conditions. And we had the right kind of weather. It really wasn't a harsh winter. And so they're all blooming like crazy this year. It's worth a drive through town to look at them all.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's an incredible sight. And so I want to talk a little bit more about the rhododendron, because it's a great plant in Bradford. And once you drive through town and look at some of them, you'll see why there's so many in town, because they are beautiful. So the rose is called the queen of the garden, and the rhododendron for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Can I stop you for a second? I just remembered that somebody sent a question last week and wanted to know if she could grow Confederate roses up this far north.
Oh, yeah, with protection, with lots of protection. Yes, you can. Okay. And that's going to mean in a spot that's not going to get harsh winter winds, and a good thick layer of mulch on it in the spring or the fall. Either way you want to keep it well mulched. So that helps protect the soil from the freeze-thaw cycle. That's usually what damages them. Now, you may get a lot of dieback on the top of the plant, but it's still worth a try. I would try it. If you got the right position, a good, sunny, protected area, you could be successful.
Okay. I never knew that that was the other name of it. I always knew, I can't think of the other name of it now. Hibiscus? Is that it?
Well, there is a hibiscus.
Okay.
And they grow very easily here in Bradford.
So does the Confederate rose have another name?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't
know.
All
right, then. Okay, but I'm glad you brought up roses, so I remembered her,
question. So the rose is called the queen of the garden.
Okay.
And the rhododendron is called the king of the garden. It's a nice spring bloomer. But I'd like you to look at the flower closely. And I'm going to hand one to Ann here. and you'll see in the side of the flower, one petal has dots on it.
And I've never looked this close before. Oh,
and the dots start out big, and as you go towards the center, they can get small. And that's what we call a landing pad for the bees. It's the plant is directing the bee to the correct spot it wants the bee to land and travel on. So we call it the landing pad. And if you also look close, that the anthers and stigma, the male and female parts of the plant, they're sticking right out. Mm-hmm. They kind of curve down towards that landing pad. Mm. So as the bee goes in towards the center to get nectar, it's going to brush on those male and female parts and pollinate that plant. So it's just interesting to see how nature can direct another creature to go exactly where it wants it to go so it can do the best job for the plant and for the bee that's possible. Now, you can't see that on all plants. Some plants, some flowers don't have a visible landing pad like that to our eye, but they all will have some sort of direction. The bees see an ultraviolet light that we can't see, so they'll have different shades maybe, or even a slightly different color, ones that maybe our eye can't pick up, but the bee can. So the flower is still directing that bee to land in the right spot and travel the right direction to pollinate those flowers and to get the reward, we call it, of nectar.
Science and nature. Just and amazing.
Some flowers, rose is one of them that's typical. And again, it's a shame we can't see all these colors because they're ultraviolet. But in some flowers, it is visible to our eye. Once a bee does do that, hit the landing pad, go and get the nectar and pollinate the flower, they can change the color of that flower. Now, it may not be visible to our eyes, but there are some plants that will. They'll change the color so the next bee that goes by can see that change of color and know that that's already been pollinated, so I don't need to go there because probably there's no more nectar or pollen for me to collect because a bee has already been there. So they work real mutual, like together. And also it helps protect the plant so it doesn't get a mix of pollen from maybe a plant that it doesn't really want.
Wow.
So the plant gives lots of signals, and it's too bad we can't see all of it. But if we look close, we can see some of it, and it can be pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that's really cool. If you have a question for Bob about anything he's talked about today or anything else that's on your mind gardening-wise, you can give us a call at 368-9372. You can send an email to garden@wesb.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075 if you have a question. So, Bob, take her away.
So a big question I always get is, you know, how do I prune a rhododendron and when? So a lot of these plants, the spring bloomers, like the rhododendron, the azalea, the lilac, the forsythia, all bloom in the spring. And the best time to prune them is right after they're done blooming. And most of them really don't care where on the stem you clip it off. You usually just clip it off to the height that you want. because they have what we call adventitious latent buds underneath. And that's just a neat term I like to give out. There's buds underneath the bark that you can't see yet. So if you trim off part of your rhododendron or your azalea, where there isn't even any leaves, within a couple weeks, you'll see buds, leaf buds, breaking out through the bark that were there all along, but they're just sitting in there waiting for the time that enough sunlight will feed them. So when you do prune it, it will bud out in those areas and start to grow and then start to feed the root system again. So it really doesn't matter where you prune it. Don't prune off more than a third of the plant, though. Be very careful with that. Once in a while, you can what we call a rejuvenating pruning, and that usually you can only do that once or twice in a plant's lifetime, where you can trim it right back to the ground, and it'll regrow. But most of the time, we don't want to prune off more than one-third of the plant. We want to leave two-thirds of the leaf surface there yet, so it can continue to grow and stay healthy and collect lots of sunlight.
Okay.
So that's important for all those spring bloomers. Wait till right after they bloom. We don't want to wait much later. 4 to 6 weeks is a good pruning time for them, because they start building their flower buds for next year on that plant. So if we waited till the end of July and pruned our rhododendron, we probably had pruned off all the flower buds for next year. Now, that can be a good thing or a bad thing. Sometimes a plant needs that even to help build up strength. Building them flower buds takes a lot of energy off a plant. So if we do have a sickly plant, maybe what we call disbudding, clipping off all those buds, can help it so it doesn't have a lot of energy going to building buds. It can rebuild its energy stores by just building leaf material. So sometimes it's okay. Or if you just didn't get time to prune it and it really needs to be pruned because it's starting to overgrow the house, then anytime you want, you can prune it off. But just know that you probably pruned off some flower buds if you pruned it late in the year or too early, like in March and April, that you pruned off the flower buds. It's not going to bloom this year, but next year it will.
Okay. All right. And you also wanted to talk a little bit about fertilizer.
Yeah, fertilizer. Again, a lot of people bought hanging baskets and annual flowering plants like marigolds, petunias, geraniums, all those types of things. Now, they are all big, big feeders. Fertilizing is extremely important to them because they have to complete their whole life cycle in one season, not like a maple tree that has all year to complete its life cycle. These guys have to complete their whole life cycle in just a few months. So they feed very heavy. And so if you can get them on a nice fertilizing program, and there's a lot of different programs you can put it on. One I like is every third watering, I'll fertilize the plant. And then two waterings is just plain water. And again, that third watering is fertilizer. So that keeps the plant well fertilized. We don't want to over-fertilize because that can damage the plant, but we do want to keep them fertilized so they can continue to grow, continue to flower.
Okay. And Bob, believe it or not, we are out of time.
Holy mackerel.
That went by really, really fast. But if you have a question for Bob before next week, you can send us an email always at garden@wasb.com anytime you want. You can send us a message on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com, WESB 107.5, or you can even give me a call during the week and I will pass your message on to Bob. There are all kinds of ways to get a hold of Bob and get your question, because he loves to answer your questions. So we will see you next week. Be good, everybody. Stay safe.